This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Welcome in. Anita Marks in for the fellas today. Canty, DiPietro, Rothenberg, DiPietro, Canty, Rothenberg. However, the fellas. We're just going to roll by the fellas. That's right. With you for the next 2 hours in the storyline, same as yesterday. Maybe even bigger with the biggest news. And yesterday when we signed off at noon, we were waiting for a decision from the Big Ten. As we know, the MAC, the Mountain West, they previously had decided to try to postpone or expected to postpone their season into the spring. And now slew of questions is, you know, is that even feasible? Is that even a realistic scenario and situation for a number of these teams? So at some point in time in the day yesterday, the Big Ten, their commissioner, Kevin Warren, comes out and confirms that they're going to do the same thing and postpone the season, look towards possibly playing in the spring. Why? Well, same reasons that we're hearing a number of the other conferences decide why. Uncertainty in regard to the coronavirus, testing, their testing protocols, not being up to speed, not being able to really facilitate excellent contact tracing, especially when you're talking about college athletes and the expectation that a lot of the college students will be returning onto campus and just how difficult that's going to be. And the Big Ten saying that, listen, we relied on their medical experts and their medical advice. And this is not a surprise, right? Like, just go outside our college football and our athletic world. You know, when we listen to Dr. Fauci, he's communicating something that's very grave and very serious and very concerning in the way that our country is handling COVID-19. And for the programs like the Big Ten, like the MAC, like the Mountain West, and then also now you've got the Pac-12 who's postponed. Now they're saying they're postponing till January 1st. When you look at a timeline in regard to what does a spring calendar look like? What are we talking about? Well, we're talking about more than likely the end of February. To hopefully have some type of season. But the Pac-12 said that they're going to postpone. They're looking towards January 1st. They as well. Now this is really interesting because I've been obviously reading a lot about this and been watching Get Up and a number of the sports programs this morning before I came on with you guys and gals. And just looking at the regions around the United States and the significance in that. So, for example, the Pac-12, as we know, they're out west, L.A., right? California, Arizona. These are hotspots. These are hotspots. Testing is a problem. The amount of time in regard to turnaround results for testing is a problem. And the COVID rate, contraction rate, is not going down. In some places, it's going up. So the Pac-12 in a much different situation than other conferences. You know, like, for example, if Heather Dinich was talking about this morning on Get Up, if a team wants to play New Mexico State and you want to play at New Mexico, you want to play at their home field, you need to quarantine for 14 days. That's the rule there. So how's a football team? How are they going to have a home schedule? How's that going to work? The logistics, very, very complicated, very, very difficult. And a big reason why I think we're seeing a variety of conferences in making the decisions that they are. Again, the MAC, the Mountain West, the Big Ten, the Pac-12 all have decided push the brakes. Push the brakes. Now, the SEC, the ACC, as of right now, they're saying they're going to go on as scheduled. No surprise there. Now, the Big 12 is having a press conference today at noon. Okay? They're, as of right now, the Big 12 is saying that they're going to go on as scheduled. They're supposed to start their season September 26th, 9 games plus a one. So 9 games within their conference and then one outside of their conference. Also, the Sun Belt has decided to continue as planned. So, and I know we, you know, art imitates life. majority of the time. And I think that we're seeing that and seeing that how that's played out when it comes to what we're seeing here and what we're seeing develop in regard to college football. Because, you know, I think a reason why there's other countries that are doing better, that are handling COVID-19 and handling this virus a lot better than we are here in the United States is because of the unity within the country. Right? And what do I mean by that? We as a United States, we are allowing individual states and how they're governed to decide how they are handling the pandemic, where it's not one rule, one law, a variety of protocols that we as an entire country need to follow. So, you know, folks down in Florida got a late start in regard to wearing masks and staying off of the beaches. Where, you know, there's other parts of the country that take masks more seriously, actually wear them, avoid contact closer than 6 feet, and do all the necessary protocols that we are seeing work, keep us healthy, keep us COVID clean. And that's really, at the end of the day, that's really the big issue here, is because there hasn't been one big, a lot of unity as a country. More so, there is just a variety of different states. Therefore, those states make up those regions that make up these conferences that are now having problems. Who's to say if California and the West Coast out there in Arizona, if they weren't in a better situation when it comes to dealing with COVID-19, that maybe they would have a season. Maybe they would try to give it that old college try and see what happens. So that's first and foremost. So this is huge. 14 schools, 11 states, over 10,000 students for the Big Ten. A lot of fans are angry. A lot of players are angry. I'm sure the same for the Pac-12 as well. You've got a lot of fans. And, you know, you also have coaches within the Big Ten that are all communicating something different. You know, Harbaugh, head coach of Michigan, really taking the stand more so with his players. Players, hashtag, we want to play. We want to play. Gene Smith from Ohio State, the AD there, actually comes out and says, listen, we support the decision with the Big Ten. Justin Fields, starting quarterback for Ohio State, goes to social media. SMH, dot, dot, dot. I could understand why. We talked about this yesterday. I'll open up the phone lines, 800-919-3776. And I said this, if I was Justin Fields or if I was Trevor Lawrence, expected to go number one, number two, at least top five in this coming NFL draft. The Anita I am right now, with all I know and what I value and how what I know is potentially could be a bright and huge future for both these men, yes, both these young men, I would not play. I would not play. It's too risky. There is more that we don't know about COVID-19 than what we do know about COVID-19. And it's just too risky. An Anita at 18, 19, 20, I would be doing the same thing Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence are doing right now. Going to social media. We want to play. This is BS. This should be a decision made on the players and the coaches, not on the athletic directors, not on the presidents of the universities. I would probably go to social media. I would probably voice my outrage and my anger and my resentment with this decision. But that would be an 18, 19-year-old Anita, and I'm not going to disclose my age, not the Anita I am right now. because we received a lot of phone calls, and I know calls are coming in right now, 800-919-3776. We received a lot of phone calls yesterday. In fact, a young man called around that age of 19, 20, who said, listen, I'm mature enough. I can make these decisions. You know, pretty much said, listen, you're disrespecting these guys, not believing that they're mature enough to make these decisions. It's not about that. I'd probably want to play just as much as they do at that age. Here's another thing in regard to this decision when it comes to college football. Now, you know, the optimism is, okay, they're going to play in spring. But at the end of the day, are they? And number one, we don't know. We don't know what the COVID-19 situation is going to be come the end of February. Do we? I know I've got some big concerns just about me personally, because, you know, one of the biggest things that has helped me get through my pandemic jam is the ability to be outside. I said this before, not that we are blessed to be in a pandemic. Please understand that is not what I mean here, but we were blessed that we began to deal with a pandemic in March. Why? Weather was changing. March and April wasn't so bad. We were able to go outside. And that's the safe place, isn't it? I've taken up tennis. I play a lot of golf. I've been hiking. Those things, unfortunately, let's be honest, December, January, February, those things are going to go away. Into March, hopefully, we don't have horrible weather in March and April, but that's going to be a concern. Weather concerns. Keep in mind, the weather is a lot worse in February and March than it is in December and January. You're talking about, I don't know, 10 to 12 degrees colder and at least 3 to 5 inches thicker of snow. So weather conditions are going to be a problem. And more importantly, how does this affect guys like Trevor, like Justin, who know that they are expected to go obviously in the top 10, but are expected to go somewhere in the top 4, let alone just be drafted. How do you decide what to do? Because if you do continue to be committed to the program and expected to play in spring, understand what that does as for a college athlete. You're going to be going straight from college, straight to the pros and into that season. There will be no downtime. There will be no recovery time. Chances are, The combine will be canceled. There will be no Senior Bowl. The draft is going to have to be moved back. And are you willing to risk injury, potential injury, playing in spring, heading into hopefully a very successful career in the NFL. It's one thing to play, obviously, now in September, God forbid, like we saw what happened with Tua, right? God forbid, you get a major hip injury, hip surgery. But we're sitting here talking about, are the Miami Dolphins going to start Tua? Why? Because that injury happened when it did, gave Tua the opportunity and the time to get surgery, heal, recover, and now have the opportunity to compete for a quarterback job with the Miami Dolphins. That situation will not exist if you're talking about college players playing in the spring. It's just not wise. It's not safe for an NFL team then to go out, draft a player, and then expect him to play week one of the NFL season. How does this affect the NFL? There's a lot to unpack here. There's a lot to digest. There's a lot to discuss. The ripple effect, the domino effect of this decision and what this means for the NFL. I will tell you this. I've been on the phone. I've been speaking to a number of scouts in around the NFL. And one thing that's being communicated to me is scouting departments. How important scouting departments are going to be for NFL teams. Why? Because you're not. Chances are some of the best athletes that are going to go in the top rounds are not going to play in the spring. That's just a fact. I'm sure there will be some that will play, some will not. So now, not only do you have a scouting department that needs to rely on last year's film, but also you need a scouting department who's been around for a while, not wet behind the ears, not new to this, has those connections in college football with the coaches, with the coaching staff, with the athletic directors, to really do their due diligence and find out, how has a player been handling COVID-19? How have they been working out? And really diving in and getting all that very crucial, important information when it comes to drafting. And so you want to look around the league and you want to look at scouting departments that have a lot of veteran scouts who've been in the league for a long time, that have those connections in college football. Those are going to be so crucial and so important for NFL teams heading into this year's NFL draft. It's just a lot. It's definitely a lot. 800-919-3776. Ira, I see you. Anita Marks in for the fellas today. We get back, open up the phone lines. Your thoughts, again, the Big Ten, the Pac-12, postponing. Do you even think that we will have a college football season? Here's another one for you. Let's say, hypothetically speaking, the SEC and the ACC and the Big 12 have a season. How do you crown a champion? Without Big Ten, without Pac-12, how are you looking at this year's college football season? And will there be an asterisk next to whoever they do crown, if there will be one? And realistically, do you think that football will be played in spring? I don't think so. I think this decision is a lot more devastating than I think what most people envision right now. I know there's a lot of optimism around college football starting again in spring, but I just don't see it. I think with the decision to not have the season now, I think is pretty much saying I don't see the Big Ten or the Pac-12 playing again this season. And it'll be really interesting to see, again, I know the SEC and the ACC, they have dug in their heels. They are hell-bent on having a season. We'll see what happens with the Big 12. They have a noon press conference happening today. But just devastating news. Devastating news for the sport of college football.
And I said it from the first day that I started at the Big Ten, that the health, the safety, the wellness, and both physical and mental for our student athletes was going to be at the top of my list. And as things began to evolve, you look at the number of cases that are spiking, the number of deaths, not only in our country, in our states where many of our schools are located, but worldwide, is that I promise that all the decisions that we will make during my tenure here at the Big Ten will always put the mental and physical health and safety and wellness of our student athletes at the center. And when you look at this decision, we just believe collectively there's too much uncertainty at this point in time in our country, and to encourage our student athletes to participate in fall sports. And I take this responsibility seriously, and I will continually do everything in my power to make sure that we put our student athletes in a position to be empowered and to be elevated. But as people first, and as students, and understand they're not professionals. These are amateur athletes, and they deserve an opportunity to be able to participate in a healthy and safe manner.
That is Kevin Warren, commissioner of the Big Ten, talking about what changed from last week to today. Keep in mind, I was talking with our producer, Ray Santiago, who's in studio. Ray Dinahan is at home, by the way, so three-person team right now here with you on 98.7 ESPN, talking about, you know, what really last week Big Ten came out with a schedule. That was the conversation. Who's going to play whom, how the schedule is going to benefit what program, what university, and then all of a sudden, boom, they're done. Shutting it down, postponing. So, again, today, Big 12 press conference at noon. They're expected to start their season September 26th. But, you know, here we are. Last week, we expected the Big 10, so you never know. You know, things are changing. Here's another question mark. Ira, I'm going to get to you in just a second. 800-919-3776. What's going to happen with student athletes? again, I mentioned this yesterday. I've got a lot of friends whose sons and daughters are going back to school. Michigan, Colgate, a bunch of universities. And they're being told that their children, their kids, are going to be quarantined to their dorm rooms. And their classes are going to be online. How you contract COVID-19 more so is in your social interaction. You know, you can take, in my opinion, again, I'm not an expert, I don't pretend to be one, but based on what we're seeing success have in the NBA and the NHL, you could take a football team and a program and you could put together some type of quarantine or bubble situation where you do that for every team in your conference and you bubble them and you keep students off campus. If a college program is providing anywhere between $60 to $100 million a year to a university, why wouldn't you do that? Hey, listen, we're going to have our students stay at home at least through college football season. Then we will allow them back onto campus after if the college football, if college football is what helps run your university and financially supports everything else, then it should be first. And use your university as a bubble environment. Play within your conference. And then have some type of, you know, NCAA, like we see with March Madness, you know, bracket situation for a championship. To me, that makes more sense. Let's go to Ira in Staten Island. Ira, you're up.
Anita, how are you?
And good morning.
Before I get to the college and Trevor Lawrence thing that you brought up, you're spot on about NFL scouting departments, the ones that have the connections and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just you know, Joe Douglas, you know, he works with Phil Savage, and Phil Savage is a pipeline to the college game. So I think he'll be a big advantage coming whenever the draft is here. But,
and just to go one step further, Ira, I'm not sure, because I know a lot of this isn't really reported, but the Giants, they let a lot of veteran scouts go right after the draft. And they went out and they hired and they promoted a lot of young folks. In fact, and you know me, I'm all about women. And they hired a female scout, which is great. Love it. Love that the Giants are on board with a number of teams that are hiring female scouts and giving women in the NFL opportunities to succeed. So please understand, I am not bashing that hire. All I am saying is this could be a difficult scenario and situation for the Giants heading into this draft, because now they let a lot of their veteran scouts who've been with the team for years. We're talking over 25, 30 years. So they let them go to move on to like a younger, different type of scouting department. It might turn around and bite them in the butt. But I think you're right, Ira, in regard to Joe Douglas, Joe D, and his connections, in regard to scouting departments, I think the Jets have a leg up in regard to the Giants moving forward, Ira, especially in this pandemic environment. Yes, you're right.
I agree. And, I'm with quality and everybody. I'm glad she got the job. But, you know, unfortunately, your lack of experience will probably hurt them short term. But, you know, getting with Trevor Lawrence, you know, I tell you, I look at myself, if I was in his shoes, you have to take the competitive nature out of it as best as you can. As an athlete, it's always there. But you have to check the boxes. And there's just too many negative boxes that you're going to have to check if you're going to be truthful with yourself, especially for the long term. And you're talking financial. You're talking about a career in the NFL. And, you know, somebody that's going to get picked, you know, in the top, probably the top pick or so, you know, top three, anywhere in the top.
Oh, Ira, he for sure will go number one, Ira. Trevor Lawrence is going to go number one.
No,
for
I
sure.
Know, but anybody in the top five, I think it's insane to play college football this year.
Ira, here's the thing, and I'm curious, and because I was very transparent when I started the show today, right? The 18-year-old Anita Marks, I would do exactly what Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields are doing right now. I want to play. This is ridiculous. Hashtag, we want to play. You know, this isn't fair. You know, I'd be very vocal. I'd be out there on social media. But this Anita Marks, who's, you know, I'm fascinated by this pandemic. I have a very dear doctor friend, Dr. Nick Morrissey, who I speak to at least once a week. I feel that I'm very well in the know in regard to what's going on with this virus and what we don't know in regard to this virus. And if Trevor Lawrence was my son, I would beg him not to play this season, even if, you know, the entire season isn't postponed. I would beg him not to play. It's just it's just I think we're in a different state of mind when we're 18, 19, 20, can't see the forest for the trees, as opposed to now. I'm curious, Ira, do you feel the same way?
100%. I mean, if I was 18 years old and I wasn't going to play in the NBA, but I was in college and this happened, I would have probably sat out a year and, you know, not gone to school so I could keep my eligibility so I could continue my college career. But, you know, for Trevor Lawrence, I get it. I understand. I do the same as him. But you have to look for guidance. You have to trust your parents, your agents, whoever you talk to that has some type of maturity level. You have to let that sink in, because there's just too much to lose and probably not much to gain for one college football season when you have a big contract waiting like that.
Ira, thanks for the phone call. It's good to hear your voice. Glad that you're safe. Let's go to Joe in Jersey. Joe, welcome in.
Hey, Anita. How are you?
Good morning.
Morning. I actually teach at a university here in New Jersey. I've done it for a number of years now, and I can tell you why there's no way that a school is going to try to bubble their football team or any sports team and, like, leave their students at home. The parents of the students who are not athletes are going to go nuts if they do that, because you can already see it happening in schools like Harvard, where they say, we're going fully remote. The parents don't want to pay the tuition. So football brings in a ton of money, yes. But if you don't have parents willing to pay money for the rest of the year or years afterwards because of it, you're shooting yourself in the face. So they can't do it.
I hear you. And again, you know, I have a lot of friends who are dealing with the issues in regard to homeschooling. And this is beyond, obviously, and this is beyond college. And my heart goes out to them. It's been a very, very difficult few months through this pandemic, and in having not just one, maybe you've got two or three children out there, and it's homeschooling, and it's hard. I've seen it, and I've seen the struggle. The struggle is real. I understand what you're saying, Joe. Just to kind of give you an idea, and again, you know, kids weren't on campus, but Notre Dame, and not enough, I don't think this is being reported enough. Notre Dame kind of did this with its football team. What they did is they took a hotel right near campus, or maybe a hotel on campus, and they have all their football players staying there. And their football players were you know, lock and step with one another. Nobody stepped out. They haven't had a positive COVID test, and they pretty much have bubbled their football team for the spring. In practicing, not the spring, but right before the summer. And so they've been able, and it kind of like this, like, microcosm, this like little outlier situation that Notre Dame was able to do this. But again, no other students were on campus. And so there wasn't that outside temptation. And a lot of the veteran players on the Notre Dame roster stepped up and were leaders and very vocal about players following protocol and not stepping out and doing the right things. So you've seen Notre Dame have success with it. But Joe, I understand what you're saying. I'm sure parents who pay ridiculous amounts of money in tuition would have a huge problem with that. It's an issue.
Never have any of us seen anything quite like this. You know, where it goes from here, I think, is really the big question. You just read the statements from the ACC and the SEC. But ultimately, I think it's going to be the Big 12, which is always the quirky conference, that will ultimately determine which way this goes. If the Big 12 decides to fold, to cancel the season, I think it will make it suffocatingly difficult for the ACC and the SEC. As far as reaction, I think you know what the reaction is, Kevin. You've been on our program, and the callers want to see college football. They understand the issues. They understand the protocols, but they desperately want to see games. And that's why so many people around this country, as you have said repeatedly for the last couple of hours, are so devastated and heartbroken by these announcements today.
Paul Feinbaum. Without further ado, Adam Rittenberg joins us here, senior writer for ESPN, covering all things college football. So, Adam, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Really do appreciate it. Your thoughts on the Big Ten and the Pac-12 deciding to push their sports until the spring?
Right. Yeah, it's certainly a huge decision and a really devastating one for a lot of people in those areas. You know, I think the timing is certainly what people are wondering. Why now? Why not wait and see what happens when practices get going in full contact form? Why not wait to see what happens when some of these campuses start to repopulate? You know, again, both of those leagues really based their decisions on what they're being told by their infectious diseases experts and, you know, sports medicine groups and others that just felt that it was too dangerous to go forward with contact and attending to play a season in the fall, as obviously more information continues to come out about the virus and the inability to do this in a bubble and do it in a way that they would feel really confident that everybody who takes the field on a given Saturday is negative for COVID-19. I think a huge part of this is the hope back in the spring that by now we would have reliable rapid testing, that you could give somebody a test on Saturday morning, no 20 minutes later, whether they're positive or not, and then put everybody on the field with confidence. They're clearly not in that place in those two conferences.
You know, Adam, I opened up the show, you know, with this kind of, you know, art imitates life, sport imitates life. I feel the reason why the United States is so far behind the curve when it comes to COVID-19 as opposed to Italy is because we as a country, we're not lock and step with one another. Florida's handling it differently. New York and New Jersey are handling it differently. California's handling, where, you know, we're just not one country unified. And so my next question is, in looking at how college football is handled, how is the Big Ten and the Pac-12, how are their medical experts saying, whoa, push the brakes, slow your roll, let's postpone to spring? But the SEC and ACC and potentially the Big 12, their medical experts aren't saying the same thing? It's just, it's ridiculous. Nobody's on the same page here.
No, they're not. And I mean, again, you know, that's why there's second opinion, there's doctors, there's, you know, people often don't agree. But it is disappointing that that there wasn't kind of a centralized medical group that was guiding every league that wanted to attempt to play this fall. Now, the NCAA does have a board like that. Dr. Brian Hainline's kind of the lead doctor on this. And at least this came out yesterday that one of the doctors in that NCAA group, he had spoken to all the commissioners, or at least his information was relayed by Larry Scott and Kevin Warren to the rest of the commissioners, and certainly shaped their concerns and their league's concerns to ultimately postpone. But obviously every league has their own medical panel, and ultimately others are not in that position right now. So, you know, we'll see if they get there. You know, maybe they'll go forward and play a season and get through it without any major interruptions. But I know that there's a lot of skepticism that that's even possible.
So, Adam, as we know right now, the SEC scheduled to start September 5th, from what I understand, right? Or is it the ACC? Anyway, SEC, ACC, they have dug their heels in. They're expected to start. But I know there's a noon presser that's happening today with the Big 12. They are expected to start September 26th. Are you hearing anything different than that? And why is this presser happening this afternoon?
Right. No, that's just to confirm that the Big 12 is going forward at this time. You know, they're expected to release their schedules. Actually, their schedules were given to the teams last night, even as the presidents were meeting, you know, with the anticipation that they would go forward, at least at this time. The thing with the Big 12, though, to keep in mind is, you know, from sources in that league, they're still quite split. I mean, I don't think that everybody in that league, as far as schools, doctors, presidents, are completely on board with, we're definitely going to have this season and nothing's going to stop us. And so I think it's important to know that that this is evolving, and it could certainly change when students are back on campuses, when practices begin, if there's more information about, you know, some of the hard issues that are occurring with athletes who have had COVID-19. So if the Big 12 changes its course eventually, which I think is possible, that will certainly put a lot more pressure on the ACC in particular, and then the SEC. Do you just want to go forward with two of the Power Five instead of three?
Yeah, Adam Rittenberg joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. You mentioned, you know, the heart issues. You know, President Trump was on an interview on Fox the other day. I'm just going to read this quote. These football players are very young, strong people physically. I mean, they're physically in extraordinary shape. So they're not going to have a problem. You're not going to see people who, you know, could be there. Could it happen? But I doubt it. So I think football is making a tragic mistake, quote unquote, from President Trump. Here's the thing. The majority of athletes that we're seeing, you know, contract COVID-19, they're asymptomatic. It's not about that. It's not about them being placed on some type of breathing apparatus. It's not about, it's about the long-term effect in what we don't know and how this affects the heart and blood clots and a lot of other things. And so, you know, I think that's really the big issue here is, you know, the concern doesn't meet the eye test, right? Like it like we don't see it. We're not seeing the sick and the ill and the can't breathing, and because we can't see it, I don't think we're being realistic in regard to the risk that anyone is taking just to contract COVID-19.
Sure. And, you know, again, I think I would point to, you know, sure, he's right that most of these all these athletes are in great shape. They're young. But the fact is you're seeing, and this is happening in the Big Ten already and these other leagues, the Pac-12, and we don't know the numbers necessarily in all the conferences, but, you know, there's been a relatively small, but in the words of one source, alarming number of athletes who have had signs of myocarditis, which is a inflammation of the heart that's caused by a viral infection. This can kill you, and it almost certainly will end your athletic career. So that's happened already. And I think there's concern to that point. Why are these young guys, and women in some cases, why are they having this at a rate when this shouldn't affect a 20-year-old, a 21-year-old, but it is. And I think there's concern that it will continue to affect those who are not screened or who are put in a situation where they're likelier to contract COVID-19. So that's certainly a driving factor behind some of these decisions from the Pac-12 and the Big Ten here in recent days.
Adam, let's look forward now. Okay, let's say hypothetically speaking, you know, these conferences do try to play in the spring. What do you think the percentage rate is for players that are going to opt out, especially players who have the potential of being drafted, let's say top three, top four rounds in the NFL heading into this next year's draft?
Be a very high percentage, especially, you know, even if the Big Ten and these other leagues try to play in the spring, there's really no incentive for, you know, a high drafted player like a Justin Fields from Ohio State. You know, certainly he wants to play with this team, but I just think anyone who's advising him with the NFL draft around the corner and all the preparation that goes into, you know, that process and not wanting to get hurt and already having enough tape as an elite level quarterback. Why even risk playing in the spring? I mean, you already had a number of players opt out of the potential fall season to get ready for the NFL draft, including several prominent ones in the Big Ten, Penn State linebacker Micah Parsons among them. And you know, we did an anonymous survey of players back in the spring about, you know, playing during a pandemic. And, you know, most of the responses around, would you be willing to play without a vaccine? Yes. Would you be willing to play without fans in the stands? Yes. But as soon as you brought up the spring and their futures, you got a lot more no's. And I think that's what's going to happen here, certainly in these leagues, and if those other leagues have to go this postponement route as well, that many of the players that feel they can play at the next level will not suit up in the spring.
It's wild to me that they're willing to take the risk of developing a heart issue that will derail their professional career now. But it just blows my mind. All right, so again, just looking at if football was to happen in the spring, Adam, what does that mean for next football season for college? I mean, because then obviously the downtime for those athletes that aren't advancing or trying to advance to the NFL is going to be minimal. So should we expect the start time for next fall's college football season to be postponed or pushed back as well?
I think so. And that's really the tough thing to wrap your head around, even for coaches, is that you'd have two fall seasons that would be compromised. We know this one will be, even if you know those leagues go forward and try to play. But at least let's get back to normal in the fall of 2021. And that's going to be hard to do if the spring season takes place, even an abbreviated spring season, because if that's going to wrap up with postseason in April or May or maybe even June, you know, you can't start, at least coaches have told me, you can't start a new season late August, early September. So you'd have to push it back. You'd have to shorten it. And then you'd have these two kind of messy seasons in one calendar year. So I think that's why many coaches have real concerns about being able to pull off a spring and then what it would do to the following fall.
Last question for you, Adam. Give me how confident are you that the ACC and SEC are going to play this fall, that they will start in September?
So the SEC is going to dig in as long as it can. But again, there could be an event that triggers everybody to shut it down. I mean, you know, everyone points to death rates and it doesn't occur in this population. But, you know, there have been some anecdotal things that have come up here in the last week or so that are on the radar for these presidents. You know, the mother of an Indiana offensive lineman who is still recovering from COVID-19 and might have some of these heart issues that we talked about, you know, posted about that last week on Facebook. That got on the radar of university presidents. There was a former Florida State basketball player who died over in Europe last week. You know, and there's a suspicion that he had myocarditis. That gets on the president's radar. So those they remember Hank Gathers. I mean, there are anecdotal things that if something happened or if there's a major outbreak, when these teams start practicing or when the campuses start filling up again, that can change the course of their thinking, because the university presidents, again, they care about college football. They realize how important it is to their areas, but they have all the entire campus to think about and a lot of other issues on their plate. So, I think there will be an attempt to go forward, but how long that attempt lasts, I think, is very much in doubt.
Adam, thank you so much for spending the time with us this morning. Really do appreciate your time. Thank you.
Sure. Anytime. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. Adam Rittenberg, make sure you follow him on Twitter, especially if you're following all that, will develop here with the college football season. All right. Want to remind you, this Saturday, August 15th, the heavyweight title and legacies of two legends are on the line when Stipe Miocic and Daniel Cormier complete their trilogy at UFC 252 on ESPN Plus. The stage is set for an epic showdown between two of the best heavyweights of all time. UFC 252 is exclusively available on ESPN Plus. Subscribe for the mere price of $64.99, or I've got an even better offer for you. Get UFC 252 and ESPN Plus annual plan for $84.98. Wow. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com/PPV. Also want to remind you, today on ESPN Daily, Jeff Passan has the latest on baseball's playoff bubble. So make sure you tune into that. That's ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts. And just a reminder, I'm with you for another hour. Alan Hahn comes your way at noon. Then the Michael Kay Show begins at 3 o'clock. And, of course, they have Mark Teixeira on with them at 5:30 today. And the Islanders, Capitals, Game 1, that's at 3 o'clock, and you can tune into that on 10:50 a.m. Let's go to Dan in Morristown. Dan, welcome in.
Hey, how are you? I just wanted to talk about the Big Ten and how they may have boxed themselves in here. If they don't play in the fall and they don't play in the spring, then they're subject to two forces. Number one, they're not getting any revenue from the Big Ten network, right? So Wisconsin said they might lose anywhere from $75 to $100 million. Mm-hmm. So they got that. And secondly, if they don't indicate that they'll try to play in the spring, then you're going to see a lot of upperclassmen who ostensibly could be anywhere from a seventh-round draft pick all the way up to a second or a third-round draft pick wanting to play somewhere to boost their draft stock. So, whether it's safe or not, I think that the Big Ten and the Pac-12 are going to say, listen, we're going to try to go in the springtime to number one, save money, and then save those upperclassmen who might go into the transfer portal.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they're taking a big risk here, Dan, for sure. Not just present athletes that are on the roster, but you know, even young kids that they're trying to recruit. I'm sure that you know, there's a chance that, you know, you've got a young, you know, 16, 17 year old who may have wanted or decided to go to a Big Ten, but is disappointed with their decision making process and them not having a season, along with the Pac-12 as well, and saying, hey, you know, I'd rather go play for the SEC or ACC conferences that are still going to push through this, whether how risky or unhealthy that process is going to be. Here's another thing. You know, we're sitting here talking about how the Big Ten and the Pac-12 are taking risks and definitely right now, currently taking big hits on social media, fans, media, whatever the case may be. But there's still the risk that if the SEC and the ACC and the Big 12 and the Sun Belt have a season and there's some type of massive outbreak at a university, and then, as we know, COVID-19, we know one thing we do know about this is it spreads like wildfire. That scenario could come around and be extremely detrimental to those conferences. So right now, the MAC, the Mountain West, the Big Ten, the Pac-12, they're getting the brunt of it right now. But if the SEC and the ACC and the other conferences decide to play, and God forbid something happens on a college campus, and now you're talking about, you know, players even more so. And we just had Adam Rittenberg on talking about, you know, there is concern. I mean, it's not a ton, it's not a large number, but what number of young men who have a bright future in playing in the NFL, what number is too much if they contract this heart situation and cannot play in the NFL and it derails their professional career? Shouldn't one be enough? Really, at the end of the day, that's an interesting, how many young athletes have to be diagnosed with this heart condition that will derail their professional career till you say, or a conference or a president says, okay, enough. Enough. We can't move forward. Because right now it's a handful. It's not a lot. There was a study, I shared this yesterday, there was a study out of Germany. They took 100 patients, and 60% of the patients who came down with COVID-19, all of them asymptomatic, by the way, out of the 100, 60% had some type of heart issue. But the SEC and the ACC, they want to move forward. It's time for our New York baseball report, brought to you by Mazda. And let's start with the Mets. Unfortunately, they lose to the Nats 2-1. Porcello, actually, 6 solid innings he pitched yesterday. But too bad. He was going up against one of the best in the business, and that's Max Scherzer. So, unfortunately, the Mets lose to the Nats 2-1. They just couldn't get their bats rocking and rolling against Scherzer. Really, let's be honest, who can? So now the Mets are 7-11. They're 3-7 at home. They play later on tonight at 7 o'clock against Atlanta. Atlanta looking to seal the sweep. Walker Lockett is expected to pitch tonight. No announcement as of yet, but that's what's expected. Keep in mind, August 31st is the deadline for bids to be in to potentially buy the Mets. Again, Ray Santiago is our producer. Ray, how you doing?
What's going on?
You there? How you doing? I'm sorry. I know I just unexpectedly came to you. I'm just curious. You know, what has been when Canty and DiPietro and Rothenberg, when you guys talk about the sale of the Mets and of course the potential of Alex Rodriguez and Jennifer Lopez being, you know, part of that group that potentially could purchase the Mets. Well, give me the percentage that are all for that.
Oh, no, they're definitely a bit bigger on the Cohen bandwagon than A-Rod and J-Lo, because obviously A-Rod and J-Lo, they need a lot more help to make that happen. And Cohen can just kind of throw his own money at the thing, and he seems to be the super fan that the Mets hey, he's one of us. He wants the best for the team. He'll throw money at the problem, but I don't know necessarily that means the best outcome. You know, Dan Snyder's a super fan, for instance. He was a fan of the team he took over, and look how that turned out, right?
Yeah.
So
that Washington team.
But there's just a feeling that controversy and mishaps seem to follow A-Rod around. And Met fans, I think, still harbor some sort of grudge for him for that whole contract fiasco back in the day when he signed with the Rangers. So, I don't know. There's a little bit of animosity, I feel like, with Mets fans when it comes to A-Rod.
You know, this is a conversation that I had on my weekend shows. And if you recall, go back when, like, Jay-Z became, like, a part of the Nets, right? And on top of that, then the Nets, of course, moved to Brooklyn, left Jersey, went to Brooklyn. And how that changed the brand of the franchise. And, you know, that's the one caveat. That's the one thing that I feel, and love or hate him, whatever the case, you know, there is a brand that is now united with Jennifer Lopez and Alex Rodriguez. And of course, everybody loves Jennifer. Who doesn't love Jennifer Lopez, right? But together, and especially, and I don't know if you're on TikTok or so how much you're active on social media, but like, they're adorable. And they're fun. You had the Super Bowl halftime show that she just crushed. You know, she does a lot of, you know, these reality shows. I just, you know, again, I think you have to put a price tag on that, on a brand. And you saw what Jay-Z's connection with the Nets did for that organization. Granted, it took a while for them to be where they are right now. And of course, now they had the opportunity to lure two of the best, you know, NBA players. And obviously a lot more, their decision coming to the Nets had a lot more to do than just ownership, where, let's be honest, probably a big reason they didn't go to the Knicks was because of ownership. But it does play a role. And so, you know, I find it interesting. I find it intriguing, and I think it would be fun, and I think it would be really beneficial if the group, because I know it's just not them solely, the group that entails Alex Rodriguez and Jennifer Lopez were to buy the Mets, I think that would be a win-win. Just my two cents. In regard to the Yankees, they beat Atlanta last night 9-6, so they're 11-6. They're 5-1 at home. Great record at home. Stanton, as we know, is out 3 to 4 weeks. Montgomery pitched 5 innings, gave up 3 runs, but that was in the sixth, so actually had the first few innings, looked really, really solid. But here's the thing. Judge was taken out of the game, pulled in the sixth. Now, at that point in time, the Yankees were up 8-0. And he had hit this. Ray, you see that home run he hit last night? Were you watching the game? Did you see the dent he put in the sign?
It's par for the course with him. Guy hits bombs.
I was reading 113 miles per hour. Could you imagine?
I don't even think that's a personal best for him. I think he's gotten up to 118 or 119.
My favorite Judge story is that when the Marlins built their new stadium, you know, they have that retractable roof. They brought in scientists from NASA to, you know, make whatever scientific measurements to make sure that no ball would ever be able or could hit the ceiling of the retractable roof. And Judge did it last year. Do you remember that?
The guy's incredible. If there's one asset that you can just say repeatedly that he brings to the table, it's just sheer strength and power. I mean, not only that, but did you also see he made an incredible throw on a tag up, on a pop up, not a pop up. I should say it was a line drive to right field, and he was on top of it so quickly and threw it frozen rope to home plate that the runner on third base didn't even consider moving. Like he gave no consideration to say I'm going to try and score here on a tag up. Nope. Not at all. Didn't even try to test him.
He's unbelievable. So that was his 9th home run of the season so far. Again, 113 miles per hour. Put a dent in the Toyota sign in the outfield. But again, I think the big storyline here in following social media is, you know, why was he pulled? And I get it, you know, especially after last year and what happened with the entire Yankees roster. It was an infirmary. You know, for quite a while, the Yankees were playing with their farm system and winning games, as we know, which really obviously was huge for them. And from what I understand, what you've got, the Yankees have a few days off coming up. So that's another. Here's the thing. I think Yankee fans, there's baggage here in regard to injuries. And like I said, we know Stanton is out. They're saying 3 to 4 weeks. They're worried that maybe this might be a little bit more serious than what meets the eye, if this is a foot or leg injury, whatever the case. But because of all the injury issues that Yankee fans have endured in the last year, I don't know. Is this assuming the worst? Is this bringing your baggage into this morning? Why did Boone pull him? Is it more than just wanting to give him some rest? 800-919-3776. And I get it. I get the concern is real, because let's be honest, the way that, you know, you got Garrett Cole, the way that this roster, the lineup, the rotation, okay. You've got Tanaka going tonight, by the way. It'll be his third start. He did look good against Tampa on Friday in his last outing. And that first pitch will be a little after 7 o'clock. But, you know, expectation is to win a World Series this year. And so, you know, it, with Stanton out and now with Boone pulling Judge in the 6th, huge red flags, especially all over social media. So it'll be interesting to see what we hear from Boone today, tomorrow, in the next few days. But I always say, don't think the worst, because what happens when you think the worst, Ray? Right now, you're giving yourself agita over something that it might not even, he really could just pull him. They were up 8-0.
We spent the entire time.
Boone could have just pulled him just because he didn't want to give him some extra rest.
We spent the entire time, Anita, between spring training and when baseball finally got restarted again, worried about that rib issue and it was going to come back. And, you know, would he be like Giancarlo Stanton, just this amazing prodigy athlete talent who always would be hurt and the Yankees can't re-sign him? And now all those thoughts are going through our mind all over again.
That's the New York Baseball Report, brought to you by Mazda. Discover the family of award-winning Mazda CUVs, including the first-ever Mazda CX-30, the versatile Mazda CX-5, and the three-row CX-9, all engineered to deliver confidence on the road ahead. Visit MazdaUSA.com or see your local Mazda dealer for more details. And again, just a reminder, since we're talking baseball today, the ESPN Daily podcast, Jeff Passan, has the latest on baseball's playoff bubble idea. So make sure you subscribe wherever you get your podcast, and that's the ESPN Daily. And again, Mark Teixeira will be on the Michael Kay Show today at 5:30. Before I get to the Giants, again, Rich Cimini just posted this moments ago. I'm just going to read the clip for you. Jets owner Woody Johnson, in his current post as U.S. ambassador to the U.K., quote-unquote, sometimes made inappropriate or insensitive comments that could be deemed in violation of the equal opportunity laws, according to a U.S. State Department report obtained by ESPN. The report released Wednesday morning today by the Office of the Inspector General recommended a more thorough review of the matter, and that appropriate action should be taken if necessary. Allegations came to light last month. Of course, we know CNN reported that Johnson was under investigation because he was accused of making racially insensitive remarks overseas. The 39-page OIG report, which covers a vast number of topics based on its findings on interviews and questionnaires with embassy employees. So I'm trying to skim this. I don't want to read the whole thing and bore you. So the NFL has not commented on the matter, referring to the questions to the State Department. Apparently, as we know, what's being reported is that Johnson made racist comments about black men and questioned the purpose of Black History Month. Also in regard to women, comments on women's appearances at the embassy, publicly in public events, he preferred working with women because they were cheaper and worked harder. Also, reportedly, he would hold gatherings at men's only clubs, preventing female diplomats from attending. And of course, Woody Johnson has denied these allegations. And that's what we know right now. But apparently there's going to be a deeper investigation into these allegations on Woody Johnson. As for the Giants, so as we know, DeAndre Baker out, no longer with a team, and is expected to be charged down in Miramar, Florida, for charges for armed robbery, and is looking at anywhere between 10 years to life in prison. So DeAndre Baker, no longer with the Giants. Sam Beal has opted out, one of the players that has opted out because of COVID-19. So now the Giants in a big pickle in regard to their secondary, specifically with their corners. So James Bradbury, as we know, he comes over in free agency, and a deal was set to be in place with cornerback Ross Cockrell, who, by the way, played with Bradbury at Carolina, but apparently it fell apart due to financial agreement in the contract. So what happens now? I guess plan B, I'm sure the Giants will be bringing in other possible corners that they could sign and bring in. Listen, Giants right now, over under 6 wins. That's where Vegas has them. They actually had them at 6.5 up until a few weeks ago. I was saying the under then. You could get the under at plus 103. Here's the thing. When I'm looking at this NFC East division, I'm looking like I'm separating it. To me, it's going to be the Eagles and the Dallas Cowboys that are going to be competing for the division. And my money's on the Eagles. I love what the Eagles have done this season. What they've done in free agency. I mean, they bring in Slay to help their secondary. Not to mention some players on their defensive line. Their defense got better. Their secondary got better. I like what they did in free agency in regard to drafting. Drafted another wide receiver to add to that core. And they mixed up some things coaching. I think we're going to see Carson Wentz play a lot more play action. Miles Sanders, their running back, I think he takes a step up. Apparently he's looked good so far at practice, whatever they're doing at practice. I don't know, running drills, whatever. Because, you know, they're not tackling, as we know. But I expect bigger and better things from the Eagles this coming season. So I have the Eagles winning the NFC East. I do have the Dallas Cowboys making the playoffs just because now we have that extra team that can make it in each conference. So, but it's going to be those two teams that are battling out for the NFC East. As for the Giants, new head coach in Joe Judge, new offense for Daniel Jones to learn with Jason Garrett, new coaching staff, limited padded practices, like just the obstacles in all that this trying to practice and get ready for a season in this COVID-19 and this pandemic environment, all the obstacles that are there, especially for teams, period, let alone teams with new coaching staff, new head coach, new coordinators. It's going to be difficult on top of, you know, here you are, you've got a Giants team that really doesn't have a defensive player in their front seven that can get after a quarterback, let alone now they've got some big issues in their secondary. So I think it's going to be a race between the Giants and the Washington team, so that's what we're calling them, to see who's battling out the third spot. And that's how I envision the NFC East. And you know what? That's okay. You know, new regime, Joe Judge, new system, Daniel Jones coming into his second year, playing in this pandemic environment. Don't even know. Yeah, we're anticipating the season to start. Don't even know if the season's going to finish. You know what? It's okay. And if you're a Giants fan, I would imagine you feel the same way. Like, we're just thrilled that the NFL is going to start the season. Again, I don't know if they're going to finish it, but they're going to start it. They're going to give it that old college try, which kind of is funny now because there's a lot of colleges that aren't even giving that college try. But, you know, realistic expectations. As for the Jets, same thing. I mean, let's be honest. They trade Jamal Adams. CJ Mosley opts out. So I have the utmost confidence in Greg Williams. I think he's one of the best defensive coordinators out there. But, boy, is he going to earn his money this year. Trying to get that defense to win some football games, help them win some football games, that's for sure. On the offensive side of the ball, I don't think they did enough with the wide receiving core. And, you know, I just don't think there's enough weapons around Sam Darnold. And jury's still out for me in regard to Adam Gase. You know, in this pandemic environment for the NFL, a few things that stand out to me for teams that I think are going to have success. And those are coaches that are great leaders of men. Coaches that players are willing to run through a brick wall for. You hear that, right? Man, I'd run through a brick wall for him. Based on some of the comments that we've heard from not just Jets players and Jamal Adams being one of them, but Dolphins players, I don't know. I don't know if you've got a roster of Jets players who feel that way about Adam Gase. I don't know. I'm not saying that they don't. I just don't know if they do. And that's a concern. Because this is going to be a very difficult season for a lot of guys. I said this yesterday. Buster Oney, I think he phrased it perfectly. You're asking a bunch of grown men to live like monks while they play this season. And I think that's a lot to ask of any human being. I think it's, as we can see, it's very difficult for a number of us who aren't professional athletes to live like monks. And, you know, and play out a season with the trials and tribulations. I mean, listen, there's talk that teams are going to travel the same day they play. Do you know how difficult that is? I played women's professional football for 5 years. We did it because we had to financially. Teams did not have the funds to put up 52 women in a hotel in a host city. There was one morning, woke up at 5 o'clock in the morning, got on a bus, bussed up to Tennessee, played the ladies' Tennessee team, and bussed back. Didn't get back until, like, I don't know, noon the next day. You know how brutal that was? Now, granted, these guys are going to be flying. You know, they have their own chartered flights. Apples and oranges. I get it. But it's still a lot to travel the same day you play. It's just there's just a lot. And I don't know if Adam Gase is that kind of coach. The guys are going to be willing and to sacrifice so much to give it 110% and play in a division that, in all honesty, I think the Bills are going to win the AFC East. I've got my money on the Bills. Going back to the biggest story today, and that is, of course, the announcement from last night or yesterday that the Big Ten is now will forego the fall season and hope and pray that things will get better. At the end of the day, hope and pray that things will get better here in our country with COVID-19 and create a safer environment for the young kids who play college football. The Pac-12 as well has decided to postpone, although they're aiming more for January 1st, where the Big Ten, if they were to have a spring season, it more than likely would not happen until mid to late February. But weather conditions, a big concern there. Let's be honest. In February, you're talking about 10 to 12, maybe 15 degrees colder, as well as more snow, anywhere between 3 to 5 inches more. And so, you know, obviously playing conditions a lot more difficult during that season. But we're talking about 14 schools, 11 states, 10,000 students that I'm sure majority of them are very disappointed, not to mention the fans, very, very disappointed with the decision from the Big Ten as well as the Pac-12. So now you've got those four conferences, the MAC, the Mountain West, the Big Ten, the Pac-12, all have decided to put a hold on things and hopefully pray that they can be back active and attractive again in the spring. In the meantime, the SEC, the ACC, the Big 12, and the Sun Belt have decided that they are going to continue as of right now. What we're hearing is they are going to continue as normal. You've got the ACC expected to start up on September 5th, and their doctors are saying that it's A-okay to play. In the Big 12, they'll play a 9-game in-conference schedule and then a plus one, a team outside of their schedule, and they're expected to start on September 26th. However, the Big 12 is expected to have a noon press conference today, so in less than 30 minutes. And also, you have Alan Hahn, who's coming your way in about 20 minutes, so I'm sure Alan will be all over that as, you know, whatever it is that the Big 12 feels they need to communicate right now, whether they are going to jump on board with the Big 10 and the Pac-12, which I highly doubt, or if they're going to have a response to the decisions that the Big Ten and the Pac-12 made. moving forward. So only time will tell. Let's listen in to some of the Big Ten teams. As we know, Ohio State, Gene Smith, Ohio State AD. This is his thoughts on the decision that the Big Ten made.
We really were really, really sad and disappointed we couldn't provide them the opportunity. And that's what I told them. You know, I told them I failed them. You know, I feel I did because we weren't able to create the ultimate protocols for the game itself where we could feel comfortable playing it. And I shared with them, I feel like I failed them, and I apologized to them and told them that, you know, I'm going to wake up tomorrow with a passion to see if we can figure out a way for them to compete in the spring and play the game they love. Shared with them that they still have so many things to be thankful for. We're going to continue to provide them their services relative to medical attention and strength and conditioning if they want to take advantage of those and get a chance to get their education on scholarship. So they have a lot of things to be thankful for. So spend the night to go through your depression, but wake up tomorrow with a new passion.
Again, that's Ohio State AD Gene Smith. Now, there is some talk teams that programs that are not happy with the decision for the Big Ten. Like, for example, Scott Frost from Nebraska said, hey, listen, you know, we'll take our footballs and we'll go play somewhere else. Not sure how wise that would be. I'm sure that Nebraska would get a lot of criticism for that, but you know, this could be an option. I don't know if a program would be penalized if they were to do something like that. When Gene Smith was asked, would you consider leaving the Big Ten? This is what he had to say.
We stand with the league. We understand that the medical advice that we received, we understand that we were getting ready to put on pads. And that was a point. That was a moment, where, you know, the science began to become real. And we supported the fact that we needed to have to make a pause. So we would have preferred to play like everybody else with the passion that our student athletes have. But at the end of the day, the medical advice and the science overruled where we were today.
Also, you've got James Franklin, who was on Get Up, talking about, you know, what will you do if the Big Ten doesn't play? This is what Franklin had to say.
If we can push things back, continue to gather information, and our trainers and doctors and all the medical personnel feel like this is something we could do and should do, then I think I have a responsibility based on the feedback I've gotten from my players and my parents to explore any opportunity possible for our players to be able to continue to reach their dreams. And again, that's on the advice of our players. That's on the advice of our parents, but it's got to be led by medical professionals.
it's an interesting conversation to have, and there's a lot to unpack here, because a lot of this has to do with, you know, what is your perception, what is your opinion in regard to this virus, right? Like, you know, I'm terrified of it. So I'm more precautious than others, right? I don't necessarily feel comfortable eating out, even if it's in an outside cafe. I just don't. It scares me. If you're scared, say you're scared. I'm telling you, I'm scared. There's other people. I have other friends who, you know, think masks are foolish and eat out every night. So, you know, to each their own. Everybody is viewing and ciphering and experiencing this pandemic in COVID-19 differently. And again, you know, that's what I think is the problem here. And I think it's really interesting. We're seeing this in regard to conferences, how conferences are playing out. You know, the Big Ten more serious in regard to science. So one would say, you know, oh, Fauci's team, where the SEC and the ACC, you know, their medical experts aren't communicating to them, allegedly, what the medical experts are communicating to the Big Ten. And so they're digging their heels in and they're going to play. Gosh darn it. You know, a lot of it also comes down to risk. What are you willing to risk? you know, I like I said earlier, I've got a lot of friends whose children have been homeschooled this year. And A, yes, it's very, I understand it's very, very difficult for parents, especially you got two parents, working parents, and, you know, you're unconfident. You're trying to, you know, be the best you can be at your job. But at the same time, you have to monitor and make sure, oversee everything that's going on with your child, if not one or two. I understand how difficult that is. But there's also, you know, a generation that is missing out on social interaction and social development. So as a parent of a child, are you willing to take the risk of your child coming down, contracting COVID-19, because you feel that the mental development and mental aspect and social development and social experience is worth that risk? Like, I'm trying, I know I'm comparing apples and oranges here, but it's kind of, again, it's art imitating sport, right? I have a number of friends who are. I have a number of friends who are willing to take that chance. They want their children back at school. They feel that, you know, the social interaction and what they're missing and lack of mental development by not being present at school is more damaging. So they're willing to risk it. So when it comes to college sports and these college athletes, is the ability to play now another year in the books, and you use the I've heard the example of Joe Burrow. You know, would Joe Burrow would have gone number one overall if he didn't have this past season? Probably not. This past college football season for Joe Burrow is what catapulted him to the number one. Probably Justin Herbert would have gone number one overall if Joe Burrow didn't have the season he had this year for LSU and LSU winning the national championship. So if you're Justin Fields, if you're Trevor Lawrence, is the possibility of contracting COVID-19 and ending up with some type of heart issue that potentially could derail your entire career, is that worth the risk of coming in and performing this season and showing other NFL teams what you can do? And having that experience and that under your belt to get you more prepared for the NFL season. It's a risk-reward scenario. Some of us are willing to take the risks. Some of us are not. 800-919-3776. Let's go to your phone calls. James in Queens, welcome in.
Hey, Anita, how are you? Beautiful.
Good morning, good morning.
As a Giants fan and other Giants fans, you know, I think we really wanted to see Daniel Jones develop this year, maybe have a breakout year now he's running the team.
Mm-hmm.
Makes me wonder, does this COVID situation, the NFL bubble, no OTAs, no preseason, is this going to affect a lot of these new quarterbacks that are looking to develop this year? Like, are they planning to have them develop regardless of the restrictions they have right now?
I think it's already hampered them already. I mean, think about it. You've got Daniel Jones who's coming into a new season. He has to learn Jason Garrett's offense. And really, the only way that he's been able to do it up until, what, a week ago, 2 weeks ago, is via Zoom. On top of that, right now, you know, they're not out there in pads, you know, going through plays.
Real, right?
I mean, the development and the learning process of repetitive going through the playbook, you know, walking it out, running it out. The development is hampered for sure, James.
One more question, if I may. So let's just say that something like Daniel Jones has a bad year, given all of this. I mean, do we judge him on that? I mean, do we judge any of these quarterbacks under the situation?
No, I wouldn't. I think this is a year. And James, thank you for the phone call and excellent questions. I think this is a year where you shelf the judging, you know, coaches on the hot seat. You know, I think this is a year that you put that aside. Teams that you have the haves and the have-nots this year, and the haves are the teams that have more continuity. They've lost the fewest number of guys on the roster. For example, this is why I love the Ravens this year. 21 of their 22 starters are returning. Their entire coaching staff is returning. Head coach, coordinators, position coaches. Nobody left. Same thing for the Saints. Picking up where they left off. Nothing new. Nothing to learn. Just come in, make sure you're in great shape. You know what time it is. You've done that. Been there. Got the free t-shirt. Let's rock and roll, guys. Those are the teams that are going to have success. Everybody else have to jump through hurdles. It's not an even playing field coming into the season because of the pandemic. Let's go to Oliver in Harlem. Oliver, welcome in.
Welcome. Hi. I attended about a dozen graduation parties, Zoom parties this season. There's about a million kids who had Zoom graduations, and we lost March Madness. But guess what? We all got over it. There wasn't this long-term psychological damage. And kids are used to technology anyway, where they interact via social media. So that's not so. We shouldn't over-dramatize. Oh, they're going to be messed up for life because they can't have a college football season. They're going to be fine. Humans will be fine.
Well, that's not Oliver, actually. And I'm sorry if I wasn't more specific. What I'm talking about is that there's talk right now in regard to this season for schooling, right? I understand that what happened this past semester, and unfortunately there were a number of kids that didn't have the proper graduation and all that. But there's talk about this season. I'm dear friends with a number of teachers. What they're going through right now to prepare for this season. Education is tremendous. There's so many T's have to be crossed, so many I's have to be dotted, and there's still, you know, in regard to pods and the number of kids, and they have to all have their own entrance, and they all have to have their own bathrooms, and how the educational process is going to be moving forward. It's a lot, and there's still a chance that there might be an outbreak, and then kids are going to have to go home and do homeschooling again. And so it's not so much what happened this past semester, but what potentially could happen this year and decisions that parents have to make right now, whether or not they want to send their kids back to school or keep them home for homeschooling. That's what I mean. Anita Marks with you, 98.7 ESPN, with you for a few more minutes. And then Alan Hahn takes over from there. Following Alan, of course, is the Michael Kay Show, and they have Mark Teixeira on the show with them at 5:30. I'm sure they'll get into the Yankees game and Aaron Judge being pulled in the sixth. Red flag or not, I know based on social media and the response, there's a number of worried Yankee fans. So I'm sure by 5:30 this afternoon, we'll know more. Also, today at 3 o'clock on 10:50 a.m., the Islanders and Capitals game one is going to take place. So make sure you watch that. If you want to wager on it, the Islanders are favored by 1.5. Over under in this is 5.5 goals. And in the series, you can wager you think the Islanders are going to win the series against Washington. You can take the Islanders at +122. Reminder, this Saturday, August 15th, the heavyweight title, legacies of two legends are on the line when Miocic and Daniel Cormier complete the trilogy of the UFC 252 on ESPN Plus. The stage is set for an epic showdown between the two, the best heavyweights of all time. UFC 252 is exclusively available on ESPN Plus subscribers for $64.99, or you can get UFC 252 and ESPN Plus for an annual plan of $84.98. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com/PPV. Also, tomorrow morning, get your bets in the Wyndham Championship. Now, here's the thing. You've got the Northern Trust that's taking place in Boston next week. So you don't have a lot of big names playing this week in the Wyndham Championship, which I like because now better to handicap, easier to handicap, I should say. So heading into this tournament, what do you need to win? You want to look at guys with good driving accuracy, great ball striking, guys that are gaining strokes gained on approach shots. And two guys stick out to me. And one is Webb Simpson. Really love him. I think he has the opportunity of winning this tournament. He's won it before. He plays very, he's from North Carolina. His family lives in North Carolina. Something about North Carolina playing in those tracks. He loves, and so I love Webb Simpson. You could get him 11-1 to win this tournament. Also, another guy who played really well last week out in San Francisco, and that's Paul Casey. And you could get him to win at 20-1. Also, on DraftKings, you can bet a straight forecast. So I put money down that Webb Simpson will come in first, Paul Casey will come in second, and vice versa. Casey to come in first, Webb Simpson to come in second. And the odds on that, 165-1, which means you lay $100 to win $165. So I put money down on both those two straight forecasts. Doc Redman is a guy that I like to finish in the top five. He plays well on these course designs and also has been really, really great in strokes gained on approach. You can get him to finish in the top five at 12-1. A guy that I see finishing in the top 10 is Tom Lewis, and you could get that at plus 650. And some other guys that I like to finish in the top 20 are Harris English at plus 163 and Henley at plus 300. Last but not least, some matchups that I like. Webb Simpson over Patrick Reed. Like I said, I really like the way Webb Simpson is hitting the ball and the metrics that you need, especially they're going to be putting on Bermuda as opposed to bent grass, which does well for Brandon Todd as well. So two matchups that I'm eyeing, Webb Simpson over Patrick Reed at minus 134 and Brendan Todd over Corey Connors at minus 165.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg, weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.